From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you later this hour. I'll give you the numbers in just a moment. And next hour, Dr. Bruce Goldberg joins us, reincarnation and psychic attacks. I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to this. I've been wanting to talk with Dr. Bruce for a long time since he was last on, so we will do that. And by the way, mark your calendar. I will have a live program Thanksgiving night. You know, that's the deal. When I'm working during a holiday and I'm not on vacation or it's not a scheduled day off, we will work that show. So the entire Coast to Coast staff is coming in on Thanksgiving night, and we will have a program for you. So sit back, enjoy your Thanksgiving with your family, as we will, and then come and join us for the rest of the party Thanksgiving night. Wonderful time at the Haunted Queen Mary Friday night. It was incredible, and I've got to tell you, it was very loud in there. You know, thank my lucky stars that I've been doing Coast to Coast now for as long as I have, and I've got this format down to a science now, because it was so loud. You know, we wear these headsets, and you hear things coming back, so you know when the bumper music's done, and you know, Danny talks to me in my ear, and he says, "Hi, George, this, don't forget this commercial." I couldn't hear anything. It was that loud. There were so many people there. The manager of the area of the Haunted Queen Mary where we converged said that she had never seen so many people in that event ever. But we had a great time, and we'll probably do it again next year. And we're going to have to do some work on my headsets, though, because I'm telling you, it was so loud. There were some times I couldn't even hear my guest who was sitting right next to me. Well, here are some of the stories of the day. First of all, someone finally came to their senses at Fox Television and News Corporation, the parent company of the book publisher HarperCollins and the Fox Network, has canceled publication of the O.J. Simpson book and television special, If I Did It. Here's a quote from Rupert Murdoch, the chairman. "I and senior management agree with the American public that this was an ill-considered project. We are sorry for any pain that this has caused the families of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson." A dozen Fox affiliates had already said they would not air the two-part Sweeps Month special planned for next week before the book's publication. In the book, the one-time football star, and he was, tells how he would have killed his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend Ron Goldman if, in fact, he had done it. It was just a sick presentation, and I'm glad this has been canceled. A parent's worst nightmare, a school bus crash in Huntsville, Alabama. Three female teenagers confirmed dead, 30 others injured after a high school bus careened off an interstate overpass in Alabama. Police Chief Rex Reynolds said officers were looking for a small car that apparently came close to or struck the bus, causing it to plow through the guardrail on the elevated section of I-565 onto Church Street below. Two of the teens who died at the scene identified as an 18-year-old, the other a 17-year-old, the third dead of injuries at the hospital. Sad story there. Those of you in the Santa Monica area in Los Angeles, you might remember the story of George Weller. He drove his car through the Santa Monica Farmers Market some time ago, killing 10 people, injuring 63. Well, he was sentenced today for all of this, 5 years probation, and will not serve prison time. Now, there's a reason for this, however. Weller, who will be 90 next month, did not attend the sentencing because he was just too ill. The Los Angeles County Superior Court Judge Michael Johnson made it clear that Weller deserved a harsh prison sentence after being convicted on the 10 felony counts of vehicular manslaughter, but the judge said that little would be served in sending the frail elderly man to jail. In Minneapolis, six passengers of Middle Eastern descent were removed from a U.S. Airways flight Monday at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, taken for questioning by police. We still really don't know now what's going on. The passengers had just boarded the U.S. Airways Flight 300 bound for Phoenix when crew members saw suspicious activity by the men and called police. Police escorted the men off the plane and took them to be questioned. The other passengers on the flight, which was carrying 170 people, they were all rescreened for boarding. Iraqi President Jalal Talabani is expected to meet in the next few days with high-ranking officials from Iran and Syria, neighbors that the United States has blamed for many of Iraq's problems. Talabani planned to travel this weekend to Tehran to meet with the Iranian president there. The Associated Press is reporting that the Syrian president, Bashar Assad, will also be in Tehran at the time, but a Talabani spokesman said the Iraqi president does not plan to meet with anyone from the Syrian government during that trip. The feeble U.S. housing market showed more weakness in October when home sales plummeted in 38 states, hitting Nevada, Arizona, Florida, and California particularly hard. The once booming real estate market's persistent weakness over the past year has reined in expectations for economic growth, but it hasn't been severe enough to offset a rising stock market, lower gas prices, and improved consumer expectations. Well, over the weekend, scientists released some incredible stories about lunar activity from recent gas release. None other than Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com, has gone to work, and he has come up with what he calls unmistakable lunar ruins on the moon at 19.5. We'll find out from Richard C. what this all means in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Richard C. Hoagland, former Space Science Museum curator, former NASA consultant, of course, during the historic Apollo missions to the moon. He was a science advisor to Walter Cronkite at CBS News. Of course, those of you who have listened to Coast on a regular basis for so many years, you know Richard C. Hoagland and the work he does for the EnterpriseMission.com. He was named our science advisor last year for his incredible work in the field of science and just thought. And Friday night, while I was on the Queen Mary, Richard C. joined us for a little bit via phone to talk about sending a man on an asteroid. NASA is considering this plan now. They're actually working on it. And Richard, I got to tell you, I have received so many emails about that story and your appearance on just that one little story. It was absolutely incredible.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people are yearning to go beyond low Earth orbit, and this gives them a whole new set of ideas. And as I said on Friday night, my old friend Kraft Ericke tried so hard back in the 70s to get NASA interested in doing exactly that, and it's only taken, what, 30-some years for them get with the program?
Hey, Richard, you've been doing some more work. As many people know, several weeks ago after your Joshua Tree conference, you revealed on Coast to Coast this incredible robotic head that's sitting there out there on the lunar surface. Now you've done some more work. Tell us about it.
Well, a couple weekends ago, I came across the release from Brown University from some scientists, Peter Schultz and Matthew Stade and Carla Peters, who published a rather innocuous paper on something called the Ina Depression, I-N-A Depression. This is an area on the moon, just above the center of the moon. If you look at the moon on a full moon night, it's about 19 degrees north by 5 degrees east. It measures about 2 miles across, and it's about 100 feet deep. And it's really weird. It's like nothing else that anyone's ever seen on the moon. It was discovered back during the Apollo missions by the Apollo astronauts looking down from orbit. And on Apollo 15, they had a very special camera, which was derivative of some of the spy cameras developed in the late 50s and 60s for photographing the Soviet Union and missile bases and all that.
Right, right.
They took them into lunar orbit. This incredible camera had film that was literally miles long in a long take-up reel inside the service module. And the film came in 4-inch by 45-inch frames that covered 200 miles on a side by 12 or 13 miles long, and they took like 1,500 frames during Apollo 15, 16, and 17 and brought the film back and developed it. Well, this is basically the state-of-the-art spy camera stuff that was keeping us and the Soviet Union from going to war with each other back during the 60s and 70s. I noticed when I looked at this paper from Brown that the authors had published one of the close-up photographs from this spy camera footage of this strange-looking thing on the moon. It kind of looks like a letter D, George.
Yes.
With a flat bottom and a round.
Or a horseshoe.
Horseshoe. Exactly, yeah. Yes. And it's got all kinds of structure. It's got geometry inside. And, of course, geometry, you know, is what you're looking for when you're looking for potential ruins. So I started looking more carefully. And the more carefully I looked, and I had some colleagues who sent me some, you know, web shots from NASA headquarters, the more amazed I was at what we had found. And so I put up a quick article on Friday so people could kind of get used to the idea. And then my dear friend and colleague, Steve Troy, who was one of our presenters at Joshua Tree, was able to get hold of some of our contacts in NASA and actually get real copies, second-generation copies of the 4-inch by 45-inch frames of this panoramic camera itself, which arrived today, and we scanned a portion and put it up tonight as part of an update to the article. George, if you look at this image, which is down near the bottom of the article,
mm-hmm.
It's at the top of the Enterprise main page, right below the Joshua Tree banner for the CDs and DVDs and MP3 download, and above the Godman ET banner, sandwiched in between there is the second item, is this banner that says Lunar Ruins at 19.5.
Right.
Because I got to tell you, George, you know, I've been looking at this stuff for a very long time. I've been looking at thousands of pictures, as well as Steve and Ken Johnston and other people on our team. I have never seen anything that so screams artificiality on the moon as this set of pictures.
What do you think this is, Richard?
Well, you know, I'm going to give you the most blown-out, wild idea that you have probably ever heard come out of me on this show.
And I got to tell you, because just listening to you over the years with Art and the several years with me, you're pretty deliberate with what you say. You don't like to take that huge leap unless you really have your ducks in order.
Nope. I'm trying to do science. My and my colleagues are trying to do real science. It's cutting edge. It makes some people uncomfortable because they don't like the idea that their space agency has not been telling them the truth. And we've been saying for a lot of years, backed up by a lot of evidence, that the evidence is in that NASA is not telling us everything they found out there. Well, here's my idea.
All right.
When I saw in the Brown release, which was also reproduced on the official NASA website on this over last weekend, that this structure was located at 19 degrees north. By 5 degrees east. Instantly, of course, my pattern recognition system said, oh my God, 19.5.
Yeah.
Now, it is one of the only features like this anywhere on the moon that we have photographed. Now, we haven't photographed all of the moon. You know, we photographed a lot of it at high res, but not all of it.
Right.
So you can't say that it's the only thing anywhere on the moon like this. But just the idea that this thing was so unusual, when I got a chance to look this afternoon at this scan, this preliminary scan of the actual pan cam film, there was no doubt in my mind what I think we're looking at. I think we're looking at a lunar ancient archaeological investigation. I think someone dug out this area, exposed the ruins on the moon that are buried underneath the dirt, the soil,
mm-hmm,
the
mm-hmm.
regolith, in this area at 19 degrees by 5 degrees, knowing that any civilization worth its salt would figure out the significance of 19.5 in this physics I've been talking about for all these years.
Well,
and when we went to the moon, we would go to that location because this looked so unusual optically. There are some color images from Clementine that I have in the article tonight, and they are ratios of red and blue. And if you looked at these, George, you can see this feature is intensely, intensely blue. It is one of the brightest and bluest features of anything anywhere on the moon.
I got to tell you, it is bizarre. It is very unusual. And again, to those of you who do not have a computer, you haven't been up on the EnterpriseMission.com website yet, picture a horseshoe. It also has a look. It looks like a tombstone, doesn't it?
Yes, a bit. Which would be
as long as our names aren't on it, Richard. That's all we needed.
But when you zoom in and look at the detail, now you have to understand you're looking at an aerial picture looking down from 60 nautical miles, with a very high-powered lens and a very incredible large piece of film, basically a spy satellite camera. And the details, they look like buildings. You can see walls. You can see collapsed structures. You can see debris. You can see arrangements, geometrical arrangements. It is an intelligent pattern down there. And the more you look, the more you'll get comfortable with what you're looking at, and this pattern will begin to become recognizable. And in the next few days, I'm going to do an update, very thorough analysis with lots of links, lots of supporting data. We'll then have the film actually scanned at high res. This is like about 2 to 1 meter resolution, which
yeah,
is better than anything up until MRO that we've had of Mars. And I'm telling you, George, this is it. This is the smoking gun everybody has been looking for. In the Brown press release, they simply are, you know, mystified by what natural phenomenon could produce this. And their best guess was that it was some kind of outgassing event in the last few million years, making it the youngest feature that NASA had ever discovered on the lunar surface that had changed. In
fact, I think it's an
excavation.
I was going to say, how could some kind of lunar gas release make these kinds of round ridges
that? Don't forget the rectilinear geometry. There are buildings down there that look exactly like you took an aerial picture of Washington, D.C., or New York, or Los Angeles. And as I said, I'm going to put up comparisons so people who aren't used to looking at spy satellite pictures can actually have comparisons so they kind of have a familiarity with what we're seeing. This is absolutely amazing. Now, we have a problem because we now know that there is a huge amount of this film that has essentially never been looked at. The Enterprise mission does not have the funds, George, to look at this with any degree of overwhelming, you know, synoptic vision.
No, I know that.
We need funds. Blatantly, we need funds to pursue this, and there are two ways we're trying to get funding to do this. One is through offering the various products that we offer, the DVDs, the educational material, the Wisconsin Conference, the upcoming DVD from Joshua Tree, the downloads, things like that. And the other is outright donations. We have a critical time limit because one thing that Steve Troy found when he went to the web to try to find in the archives of all the other PanCam footage that's out there, if we could find a version that was on the web and available, someone had taken these two frames off the internet the very night I published the article.
Have you been paying for the website out of your own pocket all these years?
Yes, we have.
That's expensive, Richard.
Incredibly.
I mean, what happens when you do a show on Coast and millions of people hit your server? I mean, does that cost you?
Well, we've been able to finagle, you know, some favors, but that's going to run out. You know, when we have incredible numbers of hits, as we do when people go and mob the website and look at what we publish, which we publish, by the way, on the web for free. Everything on the website is available totally for free.
Right. You do not charge. There's not a subscription service.
Nope. Because I believe this data belongs to the American people. By the same token, because we're not supported by government grants and NASA grants and whatever, something has to pay for the data ultimately in the analysis. So what we do is we basically pass the hat sometimes, or we provide these products from these conferences where I go on and provide hours and hours and hours of, you know, as you can see, when you were at Joshua Tree, I do a meticulous job of documenting with PowerPoint and slides and animations and all that, everything that we are discussing, and my colleagues. So, you know, you really get your money's worth when you get one of the DVDs, but even that does not keep pace with the expenses. So, you know, folks, if you want to see us continue as we reach this incredible new breakthrough where we now know where the bodies are buried, pun intended, we just need a few bucks to go and make quality scans and prints so we can follow up with the other amazing things that are available through this spy camera footage that Apollo took to the moon that no one in the anomaly community has really had access to or looked at before I'm discussing this tonight.
God, I wish you would get a huge government grant, Richard, to do all this work.
I don't think in this reality that's going to happen. But the neat part about this audience, George, is that they're the ones who have supported us and believed in what we're doing all these years. And democratically speaking, even if you can't afford, you know, a $40 DVD or the Godman ET series, if you send us $5, you will have done your part. And because of the literally millions of people in this audience, if even a few percentage points of you people that want to know what's been held back, what we really have paid for, if you want to help us, you can by doing something that seems relatively modest, but you multiply it by 1,000 people, and we can buy film for 6 months.
All you got to do is go to the enterprisemission.com website. Okay, there you have it. The numbers that really never change. Hey, I think we crashed the enterprisemission.com website. What else is new, right? We'll be back in a moment. Open line calls until the top of the hour now on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got open lines for you now for the entire rest of the hour, at least. Let me take a few minutes, though, and tell you about my Joshua Tree experience. Absolutely incredible out there with Richard C. Hoagland. And I talked a little bit about it when I came back, but I didn't have enough time to tell you some of the things that were going on out there because it parallels some of the things that happened to me when I was on the Queen Mary. I was walking around this desert at Joshua Tree at night, and it was strange. I mean, there was a lot of energy. It was a great feeling, but it's very bizarre. It's very strange. It's eerie to walk around in a desert, and I really had never had an opportunity to do that. I mean, you're looking at a guy from the Midwest, and it was strange. So here I am driving up to the Queen Mary on Friday to get ready for my broadcast. And I see this huge ship that's docked in Long Beach, California. I mean, just huge, Titanic size. And all of a sudden, I start thinking about the fact that this ship carted soldiers around during World War II. It had passengers. It was a cruise ship. I mean, it was just incredible history. So we get on the ship. And we check in, and I went and took a look at where we were going to do the broadcast, and they took me into what was called the observation bar. And I looked at it. It was a pretty good-sized room, but the first thing I said to everybody was, it's too small. And they said, what do you mean it's too small? We're never at capacity here. And I said, you don't understand the Coast to Coast audience. And I was right. I mean, it was incredible. People kept coming and coming and coming. We filled up the whole place. And those of you who heard the broadcast that night, well, you heard the clanking and the chatter and everything else. It was loud, let me tell you. But trust me, now you know we were live there. But I had a very quick tour of the Queen Mary. And that's kind of chilling. I mean, there are some areas on that ship that I wouldn't want to get lost in or I wouldn't want to be alone in. And people were giving us the tour. Erica, for example, was telling us about how a little girl's voice is heard. And it's strange. Now, they've done investigations, and they've tested to find out if there was anything hidden around there, a tape recorder or something like that. And they said, no, what's going on there is authentic. Well, Joshua Warren, who was our guest last Thursday night, who revealed that there's this brand new computer system that he has that can capture ghosts and EVPs. So he was hooking this up for the very first time for his investigation. And he was starting his at midnight. We were still on the air as Joshua had come on for a little bit. And he went and did his investigation with his people and people who went along with him on the tour. And you know what happened? The batteries died. Instantly, the minute he went into this certain area that he wanted to record. Just like that. Now, that's weird. Let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up first of all. We'll go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir. Where are you calling from?
George, this is Zenon. I'm calling from Southern California.
Well, thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you. It's good to be here. My grandfather was the MP in the German military.
Okay.
I wanted to get a hold of you as soon as possible. You told me to call back. I actually, my aunt had seven of his notebooks, He spent some time in Brazil after World War II. Now, the books were Brazilian notebooks. There's some Portuguese writing on the outside, but the rest was written in German, and I had a couple pages transcribed. Would you like to hear what I found?
I would love to hear what you have found.
It's incredible. Now, I also have some photos, too. On June 1st, 1928, Morningside, Johannesburg, Africa, my second year serving in the Sturm Abertillung as a security guard and transporter for scientific and archaeological finds. The excursions were headed by Ernest Franks, Max Sellen, Johannes Stark, along with Werner Heisenberg, senior in charge. After 16 weeks, the loss of two soldiers fighting the Malakang tribe at the Water Bowman Bay line and a miner's accidental death due to unconventional mining techniques, Anzin Mining Company had finally retrieved the machine from a 4,000-meter and a half buried mined grave. Sellen told Stark, "This one is similar to the other one we found last year." German miners had reported the find. The machine was not even grazed from the digging, blasting, and pulling. Stark remarks on the strange material. Heisenberg compared the strange symbols to the ones in his book. "We helped the miners load the machine, which had no wheels." Sellen that the other one found earlier could float off the ground and could process all the soot and ore and gold within minutes. Anzin Mining Company had made very big offers to buy the machine. Don't remember if they did or not. "We loaded strange equipment, also found uniforms, tools, controls with odd dials, symbols, and some sort of shackles without chains were also found." Stark had us transport these finds to Rand Airfield in South Africa. Now, I had a foreign exchange student transcribe. I had some ads out, and within the last week, they transcribed from German into English, and I kind of put about 10 different pages together right there.
That's incredible.
I also have a photo of somebody holding something on the back. It was Rechlin Lars Airfield, Germany, 1927.
Now, to me, that sounds like what you just described, though we're talking about a machine. It sounds like a smaller craft of some sort. Doesn't it sound that way to you?
Yes. It was some kind of ancient mining machine found in Johannesburg, Africa.
Now, do you think it was man-made or extraterrestrial?
Here, some of the scientists were talking about it being something extraterrestrial.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
It's 10 pages, and it does refer to that. I kind of condensed them into two quick paragraphs because I told you I'd stay in touch with you.
That's good. That's great work, and I'd like to see some of the pictures if you could ever get them to us.
Sure. I have one photo here that I would like to send you, so I can email that to you with holding something at Rechlin Lars Airfield in Germany in 1927.
All right, do that. It's George at coasttocoastam.com. There is a part of me, though I would love to really believe and find out that some of these artifacts have been extraterrestrial. There's a part of me, this is where the Michael Cremo in me comes out. There's a part of me that would love to believe that this kind of technology was obtained by ancient earthbound civilizations. I mean, I would love to believe that a million years ago, 5 million years ago, intelligent mankind beings roamed this planet, earthlings, and they had cities and technology and capabilities, maybe even better than we did. Of course, I wouldn't want to find out what happened to them in that. It would be a little disarming to know that they blew themselves up or they got killed by an asteroid, though I guess we have to find that out. But part of me is equally excited about the fact that maybe we had ancient men with high technology and women on this planet. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing, George?
I'm well. What's going on?
Well, I'm just listening. I just turned the radio on and I heard Richard Hoagland.
Yes.
And I wanted to say, you know, years ago when he had the articles in the old Omni magazine.
Yes, that's a long time ago.
Oh, my goodness, I'm older than dirt. But anyway, you know, that guy has educated me. He has really educated me. And I listened to Art when he was doing the old Dreamland.
Yes.
When was that?
That was a long time ago, too.
It was. But, you know, everything Richard has said about the moon and about Mars has proved to be accurate.
Richard's got an uncanny ability. He's extremely intelligent.
And, I know, sometimes I only get about half what he says.
Oh, sure you are, because you pick up on it. You know, sometimes when you first hear his theories, you might think they're a little off the wall. But then, you know, you think about his thought process and why he is thinking about that. The guy's pretty good. I would really, you know, I can't find a scientist or an astronomer to debate him. I would really love to see Hoagland in a debate with a skeptic who has as much knowledge as Richard does. I think it would be one heck of a show, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, it would. And you know who else is? Michio Kaku. Oh, my goodness. I tried to read one of his books, and I got about halfway through it, and I thought, oh, no, I can't read this anymore.
Well, ironically, I think Michio Kaku and Richard might agree on more things than disagree. I've got to find the guy who would really like to disagree with Richard. And right now, those that do out there just don't want to go toe-to-toe with him. But I would love to see something happen. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate you being on Coast to Coast. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air. Hi there.
George, you're the best. How are you?
I'm not the best, but I'm doing okay. Thanks.
I love your show, and I'm a huge fan. I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, listening to you on the big one, WTAM.
TAM. I love that station.
They're the best, too.
I get emails. Every time we get ratings, I get emails from the program director. And, you know, our share is so astronomical, it's incredible. But he's so cool because he'll send an email and say, couldn't we do a little higher? it is so high, it's almost sinful to talk about. And I love the guy. I mean, he does a great job.
What I want to talk to you about tonight, George, real quickly, something, I'm not a real spiritual person, I'll tell you that. And I'm real skeptical. I'm more of a, you know, I guess a realist, you'd say.
All right.
And years ago, something happened to me that I really thought was sort of a beyond the grave experience from somebody, my father, who died years ago.
Was it like a wake-up call to you?
No, it was actually more of like he gave me a hand in a time that I really needed help. I was living in D.C. at the time. I had just moved there. I didn't know anybody there or where I was going. I was getting lost all the time. Now, if you know, I don't know if you've been to D.C., but you can get stuck in some pretty questionable places and not really know where you're going. And I had a German car at the time that just kept breaking down on me. It would start and then it would stop. And I was in a rough neighborhood. It was late at night. And I don't know anything about cars. So I decided to get under the hood. And I'm looking at this thing and I said,
okay, so this is what's funny, too. You don't know anything about cars. Why do we look under the hood when we have no idea what we're looking at?
Force of habit, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. So I said to myself, well, I'm looking for anything. I don't know what I'm doing. I said, man, Freddie, I could use your help. That's my dad. I'm telling you, George, I look and I just saw this tiny little hose that was disconnected. And I put this thing on. The car started right up and it got me home.
I love it. See?
I couldn't believe it.
Synchronicity and a little bit of faith.
I think so.
So now what had that experience? I mean, when you said that you were a little bit more of a skeptic, did it kind of open up your mind a little bit more?
I have to say it really did. And when I tell people about it, you know, like anytime I pull people about it, I can tell they're kind of looking at me like, ah, you're nuts. But I mean, I know what happened. And it really made me believe a little bit. I mean, I like to think that I could sort of use that at other times, but I don't want to abuse it. You know what I mean? I want it to, if it happens, it happens. And
yeah.
I've heard you say often that you don't believe in coincidences,
no,
and that kind of made me not believe in them either.
You got it, and pick your right spots. But I got to tell you, there's so much energy when you're around Coast to Coast listeners. It is, you know what? I think we could put enough energy on the grid to last 10 years with just the people that were on the Queen Mary who listen to Coast religiously. I mean, I'm telling you, the inner, if one could read an aura, everybody was glowing that night. Let's go west to the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
Chris
Thanks.
From San Diego here. I have a story about a dog saving, well, I don't know if you saved my life, but helping us out in Iraq. I missed calling in on the show you had about animals saving people's lives.
Ah, okay. Tell us your story.
We were in Fallujah in 2004, and during the first siege, and we were sitting around at this intersection just kind of doing nothing, and there was this puppy sitting around that kept trying to get him to come close and play with us, but he was real shy and wouldn't come for the beef jerky or anything. Well, after like half an hour of playing, like trying to get him to play with us, he ran up and jumped on my leg and the guy standing next to me's leg, and then just took off running. We were like laughing, but 2 seconds later we got hit with like four or five mortars right at our position. And we all ducked and dove under vehicles or whatever, and no one got hurt. But like a half hour later, the little puppy came back, and same thing. He was all shy and were trying to feed him and stuff. And then he did it again. So after he jumped on everyone, like on two people's legs and took off running, we're like, oh man, last time he did that, we got hit. So we all jumped in the Humvees, and sure enough, 4 or 5 seconds later, you could hear the mortar rounds coming.
Oh my God, you would have been blown up. You would have been gone. Whatever happened to the little puppy?
I never saw him again.
I would have tried to grab him and bring him back home.
Yeah, we named him Mortars, but we never saw him again.
You know what? Angels come in strange shapes.
Yeah, that was a little ugly mutt.
You got that right. Hey, thanks. Appreciate the story. A good story. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Where are you calling from? Hi.
This is Randy.
Randy, go ahead.
I was looking at Richard's website, and he has those two color pictures on his site about that area he discovered.
Those anomalies, yeah.
Yeah, and I click on the enlargement of the black and white one, and I see a diagonal line running through it. It's like looks like it might be a wall or something.
I know it. It's strange stuff.
I haven't heard him say anything about it, so I don't know if he's noticed it.
Oh, he probably has. He's working on a bigger report. And again, get up to the enterprisevision.com website and take a look at, again, some of the pictures. He really spends a lot of time digesting pictures, he and the other group members of the Enterprise Mission. First-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. My name is Juan from San Antonio, Texas.
Yes, Juan. Thanks.
From WOAI.
Sure thing.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to know if you might have seen that trailer from Transformers about the Beagle 2.
I have not. Tell me about it.
Well, it seems to like go down like some sort of like lake, ancient lake bed, and then it just gets trampled on by some sort of large robot. It kind of reminded me of what you all been talking about in the past, and just the way some movies are tying into what you talk about and what your guests talk about.
Almost
too.
Like they're trying to kind of ease us into knowing what's coming down the pike.
Yeah, like Stargate, you know, basically all the movies just about now that are coming out. I mean, it kind of startled me because I found out through my brother. He saw the trailer first, and I was kind of like, hey, you know, it's kind of like what I listen to, you know, you know, these they say that the Beagle 2, you know, landed, but did it really crash or something like that? And just like, hey, you know.
Do you think they are letting us know slowly about these strange things, these mysteries?
Positively, yes. I mean, I think they are. I mean, I get up at night sometimes when I, you know, right before I go to work, and when you had that guy on about that hacker that hacked into NASA.
Yeah. Gary McKinnon.
That got me up on my feet. I was like, man, I just, you know, just you look up at the night sky and you got to wonder. You know, is it out there?
Oh, it's out there. Hey, thanks for the call. Final caller, let's go to you. You are on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello? I can hear you, but I guess not. You are not there. We'll go to our next wild card line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello, George?
Yeah, go ahead. I only got about a minute for you. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was going to say, you know that when they're talking about that asteroid that's up there, you think they're saying
the one that they think might hit us, possibly long
yeah,
shot.
The one,
Apophis,
the one that
it's called.
That they wanted to land a man on the asteroid right there.
It might be Apophis, but we're not sure.
You never know, huh?
No, are you concerned that we're going to get hit by an asteroid?
Yeah, I'm just scoping up there a lot, all the time, making sure. You know,
what would you do if you thought one was coming this way?
I would probably escape this planet, get on a shuttle or something. Yeah.
What about the people you care about? You bring them along?
Yes, I would. If the shuttle was big enough, I would. Yeah.
All right. I don't think you have to worry about it. But again, when we get hit by one, and one day we will. You'll hear about it on Coast to Coast because it'll be that fast. We're not going to get a warning. I'll be back in a moment. Dr. Bruce Goldberg, our guest, reincarnation, psychic attacks, and a few other things on Coast to Coast AM.